Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Into the Rift by Clay Harmon, narrated by Elliot Fitzpatrick. Part 1. Chapter 1. Jakar. I scrabbled at the wall of rubble, praying to Feldspra, or Fedsprig, or whichever deity felt like listening, that the tunnel to my homeland wasn't blocked off. But with every rock I removed, there was another waiting behind it.
"We should have known this might happen," Ephedora said.
I didn't answer, returning to my fox Dionys, so I could rummage through the saddlebag on his flank and rip out the map we'd purchased in Berta. Ephedora added,
"This is pretty bad, isn't it?"
Tunnels collapsed all the time in Mira, but there was no circumventing the Rift, a boundary that separated the country of Mira from the rest of the world, and one we needed to cross if I wanted us to reach Sommerbast, my city of birth. My path to revenge, to kill the cultists who raised me, wasn't quite so straight anymore. "There's a town south of here that might know of a new route," I said, as I ran my finger along the map. "Port Laura."
"I know that name," Ephedora said. "It's a trading post. Father always complained about how Augustan imports would go missing there. People go missing too, I've heard."
"A trading post on the edge of the Rift would likely know of a way through. If we go there, should we be worried?"
"If I was a tax collector, sure. They're the ones with targets painted on their backs. People who seem too put together, too. And those who aren't put together enough to defend themselves."
She looked me up and down, and I could see what she was thinking. The bandages covering my burned arms didn't make for a good case.
"I'm sure we can manage to blend in. Maybe."
I leaned against Dionys and took to examining the map for anywhere that could promise a way through the Rift that wasn't Port Laura. Ephedora came to my side to help, and an awkward silence filled the gap as we studied the map. It had been several weeks since we'd left Augustin together, and almost a month with just the two of us. But we still hadn't figured out companionable silences. Or I hadn't, at least. Too much baggage between her family and me. Not to mention I didn't have much in common with an aristocratic teenager. I folded the map and stuffed it in the saddlebag. "Port Laura's where we have to go. Map says there's a tunnel leading there about 10 miles back." Ephedora groaned and buried her face in the neck of her mount, Citra. The fox reached back and nibbled the bottom of her shirt.
"Too many setbacks," she said, her voice muffled. "We won't have enough food to go all the way to Sulian Dor. We don't have any money either."
"We'll figure it out." Sometimes it took months to locate a new route through the Rift, but if that's how long it took, then that's how long it took. I'd find the people who'd enslaved Quinn and the others I grew up with, even if it took years. I gave Ephedora a sidelong glance and wondered how long she was willing to stick around. She insisted she had no home to return to, that she wanted to see more of the world by my side. But surely she would tire of my company eventually. I wasn't exactly a pleasant person to be around, not since the events her sister had put me through. Ephedora mounted Citra and glared at the wall of rubble like she was trying to blast her way through with her resentment, and guilt ate at the pit of my stomach. She didn't know the real reason I'd brought her along, that if we parted ways, my elemental powers would fade. As a fleshbound, I had to remain in the presence of an Adrianne if I wanted to continue using my powers, thanks to Sorolo forever binding me to his children upon his passing. She thought I'd allowed her to come out of lingering loyalty to her brother, or because I trusted her. The former was true, but the latter, well,
if she ever learned how to make the necessary sacrifice to complete my flesh binding and tie the two of us together, she would be able to control me with a word. Trust would never be possible with that hanging over my head. Footsteps crunched through moss coating the floor of the small cavern, and 5 men and women appeared from an alcove I hadn't noticed, one hidden in shadow.
"Hello, friends," the lead man said.
The flame of his torch reflected off the flash of his smile. 2 more people appeared in the tunnel behind us and cut off our escape. "You'd think all these bandits would have learned better by now," Ephidora muttered.
"Any chance you'll let us go?" I called out to the lead man. "It's been a long journey, and I'm tired."
The leader stopped 12 feet short of us, and the woman flanking him squinted.
"You a cripple or something?" she asked me.
I lifted my dirty, bandage-coated arms in front of me.
"No, a leper. Caught the Salin chill a few weeks ago, and my dick fell off. Highly contagious."
Every male bandit stared at my crotch in horror.
"He's bluffing," the leader said,
but stepped back and nudged his female companion forward.
"You first."
Ephidora jumped off her mount and pulled me away from Dionys and Citra. She'd turn into a ball of fury if anything happened to our foxes. We moved to a better-lit part of the cavern, between an amber geode and a bush with bulbs that glowed like lightning, putting us directly between the group of 5 and the 2 flanking us. I pulled my knife out of the sheath, strapped across my chest, and the sword from my scabbard. Shooting pain pulsed through the knuckles in my right hand, and my left wrist ached, both wounds from the Battle of Augustin. Only luck had prevented my bones from re-breaking, travelling as hard as we had, but my injuries were certainly taking their time to heal too, even after 2 months. I needed rest. I needed a week or two on the mend, but I was stubborn. The woman stalked toward us as her friends fanned out. I dropped my weapons to my side, opening myself up when she came within striking range, and she took the opportunity, a glimmer of confusion in her eyes. She should have listened to that voice in her head. I dodged the steel as I felt the wavelengths of iron cut through the air, and the blade passed within inches of my cheek as my knife followed up on her backswing. My weapon pierced boiled leather, going deeper until it found the soft flesh of the woman's side. Ephidora reached for the ground. She let loose an ear-piercing whistle as she flung a handful of dirt at the closest man's face, and the bandit snarled in pain as he clawed at his eyes. She threw herself at him and sank her knife into his stomach, then ducked as he tried to grab her. He collapsed on the ground and didn't get back up. The others rushed us, but Ephidora and I were already back to back, our month-long journey across Mira's territories having etched this song and dance into our bodies. We didn't know how to talk to each other, but we could do this. The leader swiped at me, but I parried, and he let out a frustrated yell as he tried to smash me in the head with the flaming torch in his other hand. But I caught it in my knife's guard, showering sparks onto my hair and bandages. I sliced upward, and he tried to step away, but the tip of my sword cut into the inside of his arm. The 2 men behind me, who had been advancing on Ephidora, started screaming. Ephidora still had a lot to learn with the sword, so found advantages in other ways. She must have thrown the fluorosulfuric acid bombs I'd cooked up for her last week. Ephidora's footsteps echoed behind me as she ran at them. Then there was the ting of metal on metal, and the low gurgle of her blade sinking into their fleshy parts.
"Kill those pricks," the leader hissed at the remaining 2, as he retreated with a hand pressed against the cut on his inner arm, blood leaking through his fingers. They came at me with desperate energy, and I sidestepped one swing while blocking the other with the sword.
pain radiated through my knuckles and aggravated the burns under my bandages. I almost failed to move away from my opponent's follow-up thrust. For a moment, I thought one of them would land a hit on me, but a rock Ephedora had thrown flew past my head, which bounced off one of the bandit's shoulders, and gave me enough time to leave a deep gash in their neck. I felt the iron of the other bandit's blade arc toward me, and I blocked without looking, letting instinct guide me. My blade was hilt deep in his side before he had another chance to strike. I went on my guard at once, expecting the leader to come for us, but he was gone. The slap of his boots echoed across the cavern.
Citra!
Ephedora yelled. The leader had mounted Ephedora's fox, which yelped as the man dug his heels into her flanks. Ephedora was already halfway to them before Citra bolted. But she wasn't fast enough. She jumped onto Dionys before I could do anything. Both foxes and their riders disappeared down the tunnel, and I dropped my sword and ran after them, knife in hand. The old wound in my chest, the one from the meteor blade when Sara had tried to execute me, burned, and the bones in my arms ached as I jogged through the winding tunnels. A man screamed in the distance. I reached a straight path and found the leader swinging his sword wildly to ward off Ephedora as the stump of his other wrist drew lines on the ground, his chopped-off hand lying in the dirt. Past them, Citra and Dionys watched warily, Citra's mane slicked red.
Ephedora!
I called out. The bandit leader turned at the sound of my voice, and the former Principar darted forward.
Fucker!
She hissed, tackling him to the ground, her knife quickly finding the meat of his throat. He gurgled, pawing at the wound, until he stilled. Then she stabbed him three more times for good measure. He's dead, I said, frowning at the anger coursing through her.
Yeah,
she said, out of breath, and rolled off him.
I'm tired of these wolves climbing out of their dirty holes.
I agree, it is getting old. I studied the bandit leader's blood staining Ephedora's neck and earlobe, and couldn't help but think back on old memories. She had Emile's temper. Her brother had once stormed out of the inn on Dagir's Pass, steaming with the blood of his enemies, the top of his ear missing, and a world of hate in his eyes. It was a sobering thought. The Adrians had inherited bad blood from their father. I had to remind myself that it didn't define them, though, that Ephedora strove to do right by the people she cared about, despite her temperament. I only hoped she cared about the right people. We made our way back to the cavern and the rest of the bodies, hoping to find things to sell. Those struck by Ephedora's acid bombs smelled like chemicals and rancid flesh, the skin on their faces red and shiny. Neither they nor the other bodies had anything more than pocket lint and a few spare coins from a currency I didn't recognize.
Look,
Ephedora said, as she investigated the alcove the bandits had come out of.
There's a tunnel here.
We climbed onto our foxes and rode into the side tunnel, which was much deeper than I expected, and I struck flint to torch until light flared in the darkness. This tunnel wasn't on our map, which was a testament to just how shoddy maps could be if they weren't penned by a cartographer, and it made me think of Karina. I missed her and Maker's company dearly. Karina had done so well with Ephedora, helping the girl cultivate an interest in cartography, while providing a great distraction from the loss of Emile, and I'd found Maker's silent company and calm observations soothing. The two of them were probably in Manassas by now, apprising Magnate Bardera of the situation in Augustine. Based on what Maker had told me, Magnate Bardera was already seizing key mines from Radovich, now that they were without a magnate after I'd killed their last one,
and Bardera would likely find a way to take advantage of Augustine's problems next. The situation in Mira would only grow worse over the coming months, but that was a problem for someone else. I had already washed my hands of Mira, the same as Ephedora. Darkness gave way to pyre moss, which crawled along the ceiling and filled the tunnel with warm light, and in the ambient glow, I caught sight of a crate sticking out of a recess. The faint sound of rustling cloth and creaking leather reached us. The former Principa and I regarded each other, then dismounted and moved forward carefully, weapons drawn. We found a young man somewhere between Ephedora and Emile's age, standing among a scattering of bedrolls and boxes, his short sword between us and him. He was slight, with hair cut close to his scalp. "Hello," he said, and offered a smile. The smile didn't seem forced, as though he was greeting us as old friends. "Decided to sit this fight out?" I asked.
"I don't fight. I just watch the camp."
He studied our blades.
"You killed them, didn't you?"
"Good guess,"
Ephedora said, taking a step forward. But the man put a hand up.
"Wait," he said quickly. "If you're here, it means you're headed to Port Laura. Let me take you there."
"I think we'll manage fine without you," I said.
"Whatever map you're using, it probably doesn't tell you that this tunnel will take you straight there. You won't have to backtrack, I promise."
The young man swallowed hard.
"You must be hungry too. My brother and his wife run a bugera in town. He'll give you all the free food you want."
The offer sent pangs through my stomach. It had been ages since I'd sunk my teeth into baked food. "What do you think?" I asked Ephedora. Already a sour feeling was eating away at my insides from those bandits we'd killed, and I knew I would be in for a rough time later when I lay down to sleep. For months, insomnia had dogged me, ever since I was forced to kill those innocent people on the granite road, and killing bandits, even in self-defense, took its toll. But I would kill more if it was necessary. Anything to find and save the other children I grew up with. That said, I'd had my fill of death on this passing, and even though this kid was a bandit, I wasn't sure if he deserved it. But if we let him go, it risked him finding more of his kind so he could hunt us down in revenge.
"It's a pretty gracious offer," Ephedora said to the boy, "considering we killed your friends. I'd hate to escort you all the way to Port Laura only to knife you because you decided to double-cross us."
His seemingly genuine smile returned.
"No double-cross, I swear. I'll even give you some advice as a gesture of goodwill. You're better off going back the way you came than finding a new way through the rift, if that's where you're going. The collapse only happened a few weeks back, so it'll be a heap of time before the cartographers find a new way through. Happens every year or two. Just make sure my brother has a chance to fill your bags with enough meat pies to get you home on full stomachs."
"We're not turning around," I said. Resting in Port Laura had sounded fine and well, but not if it delayed us for months instead of weeks. Maybe my elemental power could guide us through, or perhaps it would just get us killed. Crossing the rift involved countless mazes stretching dozens of miles. Ephedora and I took everything of value from the camp that could fit in our saddlebags. Then the former Principa tied the boy's hands together before I helped him onto her fox.
"I'm young, but I've killed more people than you've met in your life," she said as she rode behind him, her knife pressed to his back. "Don't push me." "Port Laura's a port, if you didn't know. I've met a lot of people."
The boy cried out, and he shied away from her, rolling his shoulder where she had poked him.
"Maybe I'm getting bored from all this travelling, and I'll kill you for fun," she said.
The boy muttered in a language I didn't know, before saying,
"I'm sorry, I'll just stop talking."
As I watched her hold Citra's reins in one hand while she kept her knife near the boy's kidney with the other, a bad taste formed in my mouth. Her cavalier attitude toward our captive was too reminiscent of my years serving under her father, Sorello Adrienne. Sorello would sometimes taunt me, or look at me in disgust if I showed signs of disobeying. What would happen if Effadora ever learned how to use my flesh binding, and I decided to disagree with her? It was an absurd thought for multiple reasons. For one, she had no way of knowing about the flesh sacrifice she would have to make that would allow her to control me with a word. But I hadn't expected Sara to figure it out either. And more importantly, Effadora wasn't the type. She hadn't once shown herself to be so cruel to me. But once upon a time, I had laughed at the idea of Sara Adrienne sinking so low, and it had ruined my life as a result. Or maybe I was just oversensitive. I wasn't sure if I'd ever be able to look at Effadora without her family's sins hanging over her head. Maybe my scars were too many to let me see clearly. The former Principa and I had travelled alone together for weeks now, but we still hadn't talked about Sara, or about Emile, or about most of the terrible things we'd left behind in Augustine. Chasm still yawned between us.
"Quit squirming," Effadora said to the boy. "This would be a lot easier if my hands were free. Just do what I say, or I start playing tic-tac-toe on your back. All right?"
"Effadora," I said, "let's take it easy." She looked at me as if I'd spoken another language.
"Huh?"
I thought about pushing the matter, but undermining Effadora in front of our captive didn't sound like a good idea, especially if we were going to let him go. Maybe revenge was on his mind, and he would see us as an easier target if he saw us arguing. I bit down on my lip and focused on the path ahead. Never mind. Chapter 2. Effadora.
"We almost there?" I asked Torlo, punctuating the question by tapping his side with the flat of my blade, as a reminder that he should keep himself honest. "Quarter mile, tops," the bandit said. Torlo seemed way too relaxed for someone whose friends had just been killed, which made my hackles rise. He was either overconfident, or he knew something. I didn't love the idea of leading a local at knife point into a town full of strangers, and it didn't help that we were in the eastern reaches of Bissa, at the edge of Mira, where opinions of Mirans liked to fester. Father once told me that the countries east of the rift hated the sovereign, and that the people of Mira got some of the flak as a result, and enough foreigners passed through the border here that their opinions rubbed off on the local Mirans. We were still in Mira, technically, but hailing from Augustine would only count against us now. If we were smart, we'd throw Torlo down a ravine and slip into Port Laura with no one any the wiser, but for some reason Jakar didn't want to kill the bandit.
"Probably for the best you killed them," Torlo said. "They hurt a lot of good people, I'm sure."
"And I'm sure you had no idea," I said. "If you think bad-mouthing your friends is going to impress us, you're wrong."
"I'm just thinking out loud," Torlo said, and let out a tired breath. The boys weren't big on killing. Then Cassonian took over, and if there was ever anyone who'd get blood on their teeth, it was him. I only started running with them a week ago.
"You know what? I'm really sick of talking about bandits."
Torlo represented everything I hated. 10,000 others just like him had burned half of Augustine's capital for a quick coin, all working under Sara's wing, and one of them had killed the kindest person I'd known. My brother was dead because of people like Torlo. Sure, Torlo hadn't joined any of the fighting, but Sara hadn't done much fighting either when her horde murdered their way through Augustine and killed Emile. Her support was what made it all possible, though. If you were complicit, you were dead. Once again, I shoved away thoughts of my sister. Someone who thought themselves wise once said that time healed all wounds, but that wasn't true. If I ever saw Sara again, I would end her. The tunnel turned into a ridge, overlooking a massive cavern.
"Here we are,"
Torlo said. Wooden bridges linked together dozens of tall, uneven pillars sprinkled throughout the cavern, rising out of a floor several dozen feet down. I leaned over my saddle and saw glossy black water rippling far below, covering the whole of the cavern floor, reflecting the light of a ceiling, aflame with millions of roosting fireflies. The wooden bridges before us zigzagged to the cavern's centre, where a squat pillar supported the city of Port Laura. The place crawled with buildings and people like a mound of fire ants, and a set of spiral stairs led from the city to a series of docks floating on the waters below. We stepped onto the first bridge, its rockwood planks sturdy enough to support a whole caravan. "The lake used to sit about 10 feet under these bridges," Torlo said. "The quake changed all that. Nearly ruptured my eardrums when the channels drained." We passed traders and convoys leaving town, most of whom gave Torlo and me an odd look, and I tried to keep my knife hidden. Leather creaked as I leaned to get a good look at the pulley system moving goods from the city to the docks. They reminded me of Augustine, but these ones seemed frailer, the docks on the water haphazardly built. "If this place is a port, who do they trade with?" I asked. "These channels skirt the rift for 100 miles, and you've got ports north of here that go all the way to the edge of the Dead Bogs. Then you've got ports to the south, where the Scorpion Sea starts. Port Laura does most of its trade with Zeriv, Karatoa, and some other countries east of the rift. Or did. Always a rough transition when Mira's cut off from the east."
"There was always only one way through the rift?" Jakar asked.
"Before the last quake, sure was. It's a rare thing to find a tunnel unbroken from one side to the other. Quakes collapse old tunnels and reveal new ones, so maybe we'll get lucky and find more than one way through the rift this time around. Either way, it'll take time." Again, I could feel the eyes of the locals raking us over. "Are the guards going to give us trouble?" I asked. Torlo snorted.
"Nah, the guards don't care who passes through here. Our Mayor Domo even had a good long laugh when she got word all the way from Sara Costa that we were supposed to start writing down the comings and goings of newcomers in our logbooks. You know, after Augustine's capital almost burned down and all that. Or so I heard. The people here prefer to move about unseen, and the guards know it. You'll make it in without a problem."
"What about making it out?" "Thanks for the reassurance." He adjusted his wrists, now red from the rope.
"Happy to help."
The guard post on the edge of the plateau stood empty, and every single person beyond moved like they were late for an appointment. The swarm made me appreciate Citra all the more. If I were forced to walk through this chaos, being as short as I was, I'd be stepping on toes out of frustration within minutes.
"Smell that?"
Torlo asked, after he stopped us in front of a shop in a quieter part of town.
"I promised you food. Now prepare to be blown out of the water."
We slid off our mounts and tied them off at the hitching post. Torlo angled his bound hands toward me, and I hesitated. It had to come to this eventually, I supposed, and he'd behaved extraordinarily well considering we'd killed his friends. He rubbed his wrists after I sliced the rope, hitting me with the warmest of smiles.
"Come on," he said.
The inside of the bakery transported me back to when I was 8 years old again, visiting my favourite paternaria with Mother. The aroma of spice and meat, intermingling with the smell of sugar and flour, setting my mouth a-tingle. A couple worked behind the counter, the man kneading dough, and the woman carrying an armful of tinder moss.
"Hi, Juramal,"
Torlo said.
If you gave these two as many meat pies as they can carry, you'd be doing me a real big favour.
Duhamel stopped his kneading.
Are you high?
Your brother promised it to us, I said.
Why would he do that?
They saved my life, Torlo.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?